taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. That's the beginning of a quote from Founding Father John Jay, and teaching the rising generation is really an important part of what I try to do here. It's what we all should be working on. That's why I had a great time last night. I was out at a local college campus. I had a wonderful Q&A with a bunch of college students. I asked some very good questions. I hope I gave some very good answers. And I love to see the look of in the face, that moment that something they weren't sure about or some new idea pops into their head and the light bulb goes off. I love to see that. I had a great time. So as I got back to my office and I'm looking at my office this morning, and what am I going to talk about? And I came across this poll. It's actually an Associated Press NORC poll, N-O-R-C. And in this poll, they said that 45% of respondents said that government is doing a good job at protecting freedom of speech as outlined in the First Amendment. 35% said the government is doing a good job at protecting the right to keep and bear arms as outlined in the Second Amendment. Only 26% said the government is doing a job at protecting the right to privacy. And 31% said the government is doing a good job at protecting freedom from unreasonable search and seizure as outlined in the Fourth Amendment. And just 44% said government is doing a good job protecting the right to a trial by jury and freedom of the press, and 27% approved of the government's job of protecting the right of everyone to equal protection under the law. Okay, now, the interesting thing is they're referring to the U.S. government, right? This specifically, as I understand, at least the way this was reported, is that these questions were asked specifically about the U.S. government, which is really interesting because the Equal Protection Clause in the Constitution doesn't apply to the federal government, it applies to the states. But that's not my point. That's just those little, sidetracks my brain tends to take. But it got me thinking. So we have a survey, and in this survey, nowhere is a majority of the people surveyed, do they think the government is doing a good job protecting their rights? Which got me thinking. Now, if I go back to the Declaration of Independence, that's not the Constitution, but it's important to understand the Constitution. And most people recognize the words that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We know these words. Hopefully we love these words. But how many of you know what comes next? It says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So the purpose of government, the reason we have government, is to secure our rights. The reason we institute government is to protect our rights. And the only just powers they have come from our consent, the consent of the governed, which we did when we first ratified and then amended the Constitution for the United States. We consented to the just powers of the government of the United States, what we now call the federal government. Now, I think it's important for me to point out that polls aren't a good measure of how good the government is doing. Polls measure a person's opinion, and a lot has to do with how the question is asked, the context in which the question is asked. But if in going through this poll, we see that a majority of Americans aren't really happy with how the government of the United States is protecting their rights, it gives us an impression of the feeling of the nation. Now, again, this survey was a little over 1,700 people. The published survey says it's plus or minus 3.2 percentage points for margin of error. We don't know the details. But it got me thinking. First of all, it got me thinking, how many people recognize that the first and primary role of government, its job, it's the reason why it was created in America, is to protect our rights. Now, let me ask you, if you're old enough or remember, cast your mind back to high school. Remember taking a test? I mean, we all took a bunch of tests. You had standardized tests, you had quizzes, we had all these tests. Now imagine a test, and you've got a whole classroom, and the teacher starts handing out the tests after they've been scored. And one person gets a 45, one person gets a 35, one person gets a 26, one person gets a 31, another one gets a 44, and one gets a 27. Did any of those people pass that test? Now, when I was in high school, way back when, the passing grade was a 65. So if we were to grade the people, if the people response, if we were to use the feeling of these people polled, would they give a passing grade to the federal government? So I'm sure a lot of people look at these numbers and say, see, the federal government's not doing a good job. But I'm reminded of a quote from President Garfield at this nation's centennial. He said, now more than ever before, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. If that body be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it is because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. If it be intelligent, brave, and pure, it's because the people demand these high qualities to represent them in the national legislature. Well, if that's true for the national legislature, wouldn't it be just as true for the executive, even the judiciary to a certain extent? Now, the difference being that the judiciary is not elected, but they are appointed and approved by elected officials. So what does this tell us about the American people? If 100 plus years ago, the people were responsible for the character of their Congress, are they not responsible for the character of their government today? Remember the preamble to the Constitution. We the people do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. What does it say about us? What does it say about us that not a majority of those polled, certainly not a passing grade, but not a majority of those polled thinks the government is doing a good job at their primary function, that of protecting the rights of the people? So with that in mind, let's take a look through the news and see what else is going on that, well, let's say may or may not impact this view that showed up in this poll. Now, I talked previously about some plans from the Biden administration to look at bank depository reporting requirements. Now, many of you may know that if you deposit a large sum of money in the bank, I believe the current number is $10,000 or more, the bank is required to notify the federal government. There doesn't have to be any evidence of criminality, any suspicious behavior. Simply depositing a large sum of money needs to be reported. Well, according to a recent spending proposal, they want financial institutions to report $600 or more. Yeah, that's a decent paycheck. Now, that is bad enough. I mean, the fact that the federal government, nosy government, wants to know all the money you're depositing on the off chance that they may find something that they don't like. Well, a letter was signed by several, I believe, members of the House. It was created by Wisconsin Representative Scott Fitzgerald and signed by several of his other members of the House. And let's see, in this letter, he states, the recent spending proposal to include new tax information reporting requirements for financial institutions would not only impose significant compliance costs on our banks, credit unions, and related financial institutions that have served as the backbone of this economy these past 18 months, but also infringe on the privacy of millions of Americans. Now, first things first. So his primary concern is the amount of work banks would have to go through to comply with this. Don't get me wrong. Those compliance costs are not insignificant. They are a burden, but I'm actually more concerned about the fact that he turns around and says, oh, by the way, it's an infringement on the privacy of millions of Americans. How about it's the fact that it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment? How about the fact that it's actually an unreasonable search? They are searching your records simply because they want to search your records simply because you deposit $600. Now, they already have claimed the authority to search your records, be notified if you deposit $10,000. Isn't that an arbitrary number? Which means this is an arbitrary law, which means this is a tyrannical law. See, it's one thing if the federal government has reason to, has probable cause that you or someone you work with is committing a crime, they can go to a judge, they can show that probable cause. If they get a warrant, they can search your records. Why does the federal government need to know everything you do without any even hint that you've done anything wrong or illegal? Because the federal government no longer protects your right to be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures. That's why. And maybe that's why only 31% of those surveyed thought the government was doing a good job at protecting them from said unreasonable searches and seizures, as required in the Fourth Amendment. The report said as outlined in the Fourth Amendment. No, it's required in the Fourth Amendment. It's not optional. The buffoon Biden is absolutely categorically wrong. The amendments are absolute. In fact, the amendments are more absolute than anything he says because they are the supreme law of the land. So when the Fourth Amendment says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, that's not inferred. That's not outlined. That is a positive command, which means this, even the existing reporting system is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And since any time someone at a bank reports on a deposit without probable cause, they are depriving you of your right to be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures as protected by the Fourth Amendment. And they're doing so based on a government regulation, which means they're in violation of Title 18, United States Code, Section 242. Which states, whoever, under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom, willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year. Now, I guess it all comes down to the question of willfully. If the federal government, if a bank regulator or somebody with a federal paycheck interrogates, insists, it coerces someone at a bank to report this, maybe the bank personnel have not willfully subjected to, but the regulator has. The person with the federal paycheck, they have willfully subjected someone to a deprivation of rights under color of law based on a regulation, maybe a law, but that's a crime. See, that's the part I think most Americans keep missing, is these aren't simply niceties that are not being followed. These are crimes that are being committed. Here's another one. See, a federal appeals court dismissed a lawsuit against the NSA. Wikimedia Foundation, which runs Wikipedia, challenged NSA's mass interception and searching of your internet communication. And they went to court, and the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals said that the lawsuit must be dismissed because the government invoked the, quote, state secrets privilege, close quote. Now, I'd like to remind the judges on that Circuit Court of Appeal that the Constitution supersedes the government's state secrets privilege. If that's a consideration, government could simply say everything's a state secret, and therefore nothing they do could be reviewed in court. In fact, I'd say this court went so far as to deprive the people and owners of Wikimedia of their right to a petition to government for a redress of grievance, protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution, that these judges all swore to support in their oath of office. Now, not all the judges sided. There was a split in the court. Judge Diane Motz, who dissented, warned that the majority opinion stands for a sweeping proposition. A suit may be dismissed under the state secrets doctrine after minimal judicial review, even when the government premises its only defense on far-fetched hypotheticals. Maybe that's why the people don't really trust that the government is protecting their rights when they're spying on them. And all, you know, when it gets reviewed in court, all they do is say, "Oh, no, state secrets. You can't look at that. You can't investigate that. It's a state secret." Maybe that's why 31% don't believe the government's doing a good job of protecting you from unreasonable searches and seizures, because this U.S. Court of Appeals is part of the federal government. Remember, three branches. We have judicial, executive, and legislative. The judicial branch is just as much a part of the federal government as the executive and legislative. So maybe there's good reason why the people don't feel that the government's doing its job. And of course, we have the border insanity. A U.S. district judge for the District of Columbia prevented President Biden from turning away migrant families and children under 18 based on a health order of the COVID pandemic. Now, there's an important piece to understand here. This gets missed by almost everybody I've ever seen talk about the border and migrants. You see, the Constitution does not delegate to the federal government the ability to regulate immigration at all. In fact, the only power given to the federal government is Congress is given the power in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 to establish a uniform rule of naturalization, not on immigration and not on migration. So when a federal judge tells the federal government that you have to let people in, both of them are violating the Constitution. So what does Texas do? Texas is being overrun, at least according to the reporting coming out of there. So the governor, Abbott, said that his Department of Public Safety and the Texas National Guard were going to close 6 points of entry on the southern border. Now, he made this statement, and people went berserk, but they forget the southern border isn't simply the border of the United States. It's also the border of Texas. So when a federal judge, and I love the way these are put out, when a federal judge ruled, all right, problem number one, federal judges don't rule. I'm reading this one actually is coming from the Daily Courier. It says, a ruling from a federal judge. Federal judges do not rule. They offer opinions, and their opinions do not have the force of law. They require the executive branch to enact them. That's the way it was designed. So when a federal judge says, sorry, Governor Abbott, you can't do this, guess what? As a party to the Constitution that created the office that federal judge sits in, the state of Texas has the ability to look at the judge and say, thank you for your opinion. You're wrong. We are doing what is within our constitutional authority, the Constitution of the state of Texas. Because that's not a power they delegated to the federal government. Therefore, since it's not prohibited to the states, it is retained by the states. The Constitution doesn't give it to the states. The states retain it. So maybe that's part of the reason why the American people don't think the federal government's doing a very good job protecting their rights, because they're certainly not doing a very good job protecting the border, at least not at the moment. And they haven't done a very good job for a very long time. There have been good times and bad times, but as a whole, they've done a pretty poor job. Now, again, it's not simply the president. It's not simply judges. So even when people in government are doing things that you might like, very often they're not protecting your rights. Now, I've talked about the calls by certain senators, by Senator Warren, that Facebook censor certain information and that Amazon not promote certain books. I've talked about that. But here you have Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. That's right, my home state. Sending a letter to Google demanding they stop censoring pro-life ads. And you may be saying, that's right, Paul, you know, they shouldn't censor. I agree, they shouldn't. But is it the power of the federal government? Is it the role of the federal government to determine what can and cannot be censored? See, isn't it just as wrong for Marsha Blackburn to tell Google what they can and cannot censor as it is for Senator Warren to tell Facebook to do the exact same thing? Isn't it just as evil when a Republican tells a privately owned company how to run their business, what must be allowed on their platform, as it is when a Democrat? And if your answer is no, then you're not interested in the Constitution, you're not interested in rights and liberty, you're a partisan hack. So when I say a pox on both their houses, this is exactly what I mean. I don't care if you're Senator Warren, I don't care if you're Senator Blackburn. What you are doing is a crime. You are attempting to deprive a company under color of your position as a senator of control of its platform. Now, you may like the platform, you may hate the platform. I have not used Google search for years. I avoid Google services when at all possible. Some of the applications may be using it and I'm not aware of it, but I avoid Google whenever I can. But that doesn't mean I gave the federal government the authority to tell Google how to run their business. Maybe that's why the people don't trust the federal government is protecting their rights. Because they're not. Or this story coming out of Alabama. Now, there's a treatment for COVID-19 called a monoclonal antibody. Now, I'm not a virologist. I'm not an immunologist. I'm not sure all the details of this, but apparently this has been working in certain states. But here's why I'm bringing this up. See, Alabama's complaining because the federal government has started rationing this treatment. That's right. The federal government's getting to decide who is allowed to have this treatment. Isn't anybody else bothered by this? Is this not a deprivation of liberty without due process? Where does the federal government get the authority to ration a product? The answer is nowhere. They have no legal authority to do this, which is why the American people don't trust the federal government. It's why the polling numbers of trusting the government of the United States to protect our rights are so low, because they have had such an example of not doing it. Now, whether or not monoclonal antibodies are a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. For this standpoint, I don't care. The point is, the federal government has no legal authority to ration medical devices, medical products at all. None. It's not in the Constitution, therefore they don't have it. So this is just another crime committed by our supposed overlords in Washington, D.C., committed on the American people and on the states. And again, I don't know if monoclonal antibodies work or don't work. I don't know. But whether they do, that's up to the people to decide, not the federal government. It's up to the people to decide what is the best healthcare treatment. And if there's a limitation on those resources, it's up to the manufacturer how to deal with the limitations of its product, the limited availability of their product, not the government of the United States. We specifically did not grant them that authority. So no wonder people don't trust that they will protect our rights, since they completely abuse them whenever they feel like. Now, before I head off the break, I want to encourage you to go to a couple places. First thing I'd like you to do is head to constitutionstudy.com. Check out the website. Find my articles, my videos, my podcast, all these information you can find about the Constitution. You can ask a question. Just go to the Ask a Question in the menu bar if you'd like me to answer a question for you. Hey, if it's a good question, maybe I'll answer it on the radio. And you can listen to my answer as well as read it. That's all there at constitutionstudy.com. Check out the shop. Maybe buy a book. Maybe just support the work that we're doing. Keep the website going. Help me go out and speak to groups about the Constitution. Help educate the current generation and the rising generation without having to charge people to do that. That's one place I'd like you to check out. The other place I'd like you to go is healthycell.com/outloud. You know, I've been taking vitamins for years. My wife likes me to take vitamins. And when we found Healthy Cell, it's really a unique product because instead of a bunch of pills, it's a gel pack. You either take it directly or you can mix it into something, mix it in your yogurt, mix it in your coffee, and get the vitamins you need that work at the cellular level to boost your immune system, to help you sleep better, all without taking a bunch of pills. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud. Now, I don't know about you, but it gets to the end of the day and I have a hard time focusing on things, right? You get tired, the mind tends to wander. Focus and recall helps with that. It helps you focus the mind on what you're working on. Get the work you need to get it done quicker, get it done better. So try focus and recall. Again, that's at healthycell.com/outloud for 20% off your first order.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets. America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me. We are looking at this poll that says, you know what? The majority of the people don't trust that the federal government's actually protecting their rights. And I think there's more than sufficient examples of why that is true. Now, again, these are polls which measure people's opinion, and we don't have, I don't have at least the details of the context or how the questions are asked, but let's assume that it's true, that the majority of Americans don't believe the federal government's doing a good job protecting their rights. What are some examples of that? Well, it's been interesting. Fox News has been flying a drone over the southern border for months. They're documenting people who have been showing up and encampments and all that. All of a sudden, when they had this video of thousands of migrants all waiting under a bridge for their chance to rush into the country, all of a sudden, the Federal Aviation Administration comes in and issues a TFR, a temporary flight restriction. So suddenly the FAA decides that they're not allowed to fly over this area. Now, I actually looked at the FAA's website, and sure enough, September 16th, they put in place what's called a NOTAM, a notice to airmen, that no UAS or I think that's unmanned aerial system, are authorized in the area covered by this NOTAM, which is basically a 2 nautical mile radius right around where Fox was getting those news, those pictures. So let me ask you, if these surveillance drones, these drones have been up for months, and then all of a sudden, when you know the pictures start getting really, really bad, the FAA shuts down the drones just in that one area? I mean, you're not protecting the border if it's a 2 nautical mile radius right on that border. Tell me this doesn't smell like a government censorship. Yeah, government censorship. That First Amendment thing. The ability to, now granted, this is not speech, but this is press. This is the ability to gather and to report information. Now, okay, it's not technically the publishing of the information, but aren't they publishing the pictures? So is that not a restriction on the freedom of the press because it looks bad? I wonder why 45% of the respondents to the poll thought that the government was doing a good job protecting freedom of speech, or freedom of the press for that matter. When here, now you have, and again, maybe this happened before the poll, but now you have the federal government saying, nope, we don't like these pictures. So they don't provide, at least I haven't seen anybody provide a reason why they've done this. So it certainly begs the question, isn't this just the government hiding information they don't like? Now, we've talked a lot about examples where the government of the United States is not protecting the rights. In many cases, it's infringing on the rights of the American people. And again, there are plenty more examples. I just picked out a few. But I want to show some other reasons why the federal government's not trustworthy. And I want to talk about why that's important. So the Biden administration has issued a warning that the federal debt crisis, as they call it, might trigger an economic recession. All right, let's start with a little bit of facts and data. Now, Congress is authorized to collect taxes to pay the debts of the United States. They are entitled to borrow money on the credit of the United States. And there's nothing in the Constitution that places a limit on that borrowing and on that collection of debt. The only limit to Congress's ability to authorize the borrowing of money, or I should say the United States borrowing money, is Congress has put a limit into law. Now, hopefully we're all familiar with this idea of a credit limit. You know, you get a credit card or some other loan, a revolving loan, you get a credit limit. This is how much money you're allowed to borrow. Congress sets that. But if there's one thing Congress has shown itself unwilling to do, is to be responsible with spending your money. The jokes about it are numerous, and you know, nobody, no economist in their right mind looks at $23 trillion debt on a $20 trillion GDP and says, that's a good place to be. It makes no logical sense. I mean, I guess, you know, if you live in the world of you know, unicorn horns and you know, magic money that just appears out of nowhere, anywhere else, this doesn't make sense. But now you have the Biden administration looking at the fact that, you know what, Congress has been spending, first of all, we tend to blame the executive branch. It's Congress that authorizes all this spending, and it all comes out of the House of Representatives. So these are your representatives, your employees, that have spent in a way that, you know, drunken sailors would be ashamed of. They spend money like a fish goes through water. It's unbelievable. It's irresponsible. But we keep hiring them and to do it. So now the administration says, listen, you know, we're spending money. We're spending, on average lately, $1 trillion a year more than they collect in taxes. Think of that. A million dollars a year more than the federal government takes in taxes. Now, I know we're not really good with really, really large numbers, all right? Yeah, a trillion, a million, million. Let's put some perspective into this. This is the year 2021. 2002 and 21 years, Anno Domini, year of our Lord. So if we take 2021 years, we multiply by 365 days in a year. Yes, we'll skip leap years for now. We multiply that by 24 hours a day, 60 minutes an hour, and 60 seconds in a minute. You come up with a number of just shy of 64 billion seconds. That means if you spent a dollar every second from the day of Christ's birth to today, you'd be spending roughly $64 billion, not even to a trillion yet. In fact, if you were to spend $1 every second, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, do you know how long it would take to spend $1 trillion? Almost 32,000 years. In fact, it would take you 31,709 and change years in order to spend $1 trillion. You spent it a second, a dollar a second. Just think about it. Take some cash out of your wallet and just go 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000, 4-1,000 for almost 32,000 years. Does that start to put some perspective in? That's $1 trillion, not 20. That is a single trillion dollars. These numbers are astronomical. These numbers are irrational. But we keep doing it. So we have the President of the United States saying, listen, yeah, we know we're $20 trillion plus dollars in debt. We need to borrow more. Now, notice he says that hitting the debt ceiling could cause a recession. Well, let's stop and think about this for just a second. Inflation is already going up. It's what? The CPI is at 5 annually, 5 plus annually. So inflation is already creeping up. The monetary value is down. But notice he says that hitting the debt ceiling could cause a recession. Now, this requires two very important misunderstandings. First, if we hit the debt ceiling, all that means is that Congress can't borrow any more money. They've told themselves they can't borrow any more money. They've kind of gone, it's like the smoker that goes cold turkey. That's it. No more cigarettes, no more cash, no more borrowing. The federal government still takes in between roughly $3 to $4 trillion a year in taxes. So it's not like the government runs out of money. They just can't borrow more money. But does that mean the end of the economy? The economy is going to fail because now Congress wouldn't be able to borrow more money. Now, we still have to pay the interest on the money we've borrowed. But this assumes that the federal government is the economy. That without the federal government spending money it doesn't have, the economy ceases to function. As President Biden put, the economic growth would falter, unemployment would rise, the labor market would close, would lose millions of jobs because the federal government can't borrow more money? Are you telling me that Walmart, Target, Lowe's, Home Depot, Kroger, Food Lion, all of these companies are suddenly going to stop hiring people because the federal government can't borrow money? Could it be that the American people have become so dependent on the federal government running everything that we don't understand that, yes, it would have a drastic impact on federal employees? It would have a drastic impact on people who have become dependent on the federal government, or at least it could. We'd have to prioritize where we actually spend the money we take in, just like, pretty much every household in this country. Could it be, again, that the American people has simply subjected themselves, become slaves to the federal government to the point where if the federal government isn't throwing money your way, your life is no good? Are you telling me that the American people can't survive without the federal government throwing money at them? Is that really what the American people have fallen to? See, this is not simply a question of the federal government protecting our rights. Now we're talking about situations where the federal government, where we're actually dependents of the federal government. We are, in many ways, many Americans are dependent on the federal government. I mean, we're like their children. Now, personally, I'm not. I pay my own way, but how many Americans aren't? How many Americans are dependent on the federal government throwing things at them for something to happen? Or how about this one? This one caught my eye. The Biden administration announced that it plans to award 16 slots for flights at Newark International Airport in New Jersey for some yet-to-be-determined low-cost carrier. Okay, now you may be saying, Paul, what does this have to do with you know, the government protecting our rights and whatnot? Well, let's go a little deeper. See, according to this article in the Epoch Times, the U.S. Justice Department urged the Transportation Department to not retire the slots and instead use them to spur competition. Okay. So let me stop and let's stop and think about this for a minute. First of all, tell me, where in the Constitution is the federal government authorized to have a Department of Transportation? I mean, other than interstate commerce, what is the purpose of the Department of Transportation that is authorized by the Constitution? So the Department of Transportation has nothing to do with this. Second of all, where in the Constitution is the federal government authorized to, how do you put it, spur competition? Where? Where is it required to address capacity constraints at airports? See, the answer is it isn't. But what's happened is we've allowed our cities to, in effect, federalize the airports, to hand them over to the federal government, making them, what, needful buildings? Because that's the only property that Congress is authorized to manage, is things like forts and magazines and needful buildings. But they're not doing, we're not simply talking about regulating airports, they're talking about regulating transportation. Again, not simply commerce, transportation. They're deciding who gets to fly into Newark Airport. Now, this is where the problems really start. See, again, there is no authorization for DART transportation, which includes the Federal Aviation Administration. The only power for the Federal Aviation Administration would be to oversee interstate commerce. But they do so much more. Now, again, I'm not saying that maybe the federal government shouldn't be allowed to manage aviation. I mean, aviation is very much interstate and international. But we never authorized it. We never bothered. We simply let the government take over. So now you have the people in Newark, New Jersey, and the surrounding area. Now, if you've ever flown into New York, Newark is one of the three major airports in and around New York City. It is a very congested airspace. There is a lot of travel in there, but shouldn't it be the people in Newark, New Jersey that are determining which airlines would best serve them? In other words, why is it the federal government telling the people of Newark who are the best airlines to service their needs? Now, right now, United uses Newark as a hub, so there's lots of United airlines. But you see, the Federal Aviation Administration weighs in saying, you know what, if we don't bring in a low-cost carrier, we don't expect things to get cheaper. But remember, the FAA has two diametrically opposed mandates. Mandate one is to oversee the airlines to ensure safety of operation. The other is to promote air travel. So let me tell you, if they are promoting certain airlines, low-cost airlines, into certain airports, are they worried about safety or are they worried about economy? I have a wonderful idea. Now, I know this is a strange idea. This is a radical idea, you know, but I have a wonderful idea. How about the people of Newark determine which airlines they think would serve them the best? How do they do that? by choosing airlines themselves. And there are a limited number of slots. You've got a limited number of gates. That means there's a limited number of flights that can be serviced at the airport at any time. So those slots are, in effect, rented, divvied up to different airlines. How about we let the people in Newark decide? Do they want United to get bigger? Do they want another airline to come in? How about we let them, the people of Newark, decide who's best to serve them at the Newark airport? But again, we've simply handed over all this aviation stuff to the federal government, and we even stop thinking of our own airports as our airports. We let the federal government decide who's allowed to fly into and out of our major airports, who's allowed to conduct commerce at an airport, regardless of whether the flight is interstate or not. See, unless it's interstate, it really isn't any of the federal government's business. Now, again, I understand in the new world, there are things that would be better be served at the federal level than the state level. And there are several aspects of air travel. I want a national air traffic control system. I think that's a good thing. For those of you who don't know, when I was much younger, I actually considered becoming a pilot. I actually took lessons and considered becoming a commercial pilot, mainly because I did not qualify to be a fighter pilot. I was thinking about becoming a commercial pilot or maybe an instructor of some sort. And so I did a little flying when I was younger, much, much younger. So I understand and I can see the logic of a national air traffic control system rather than having a state-based air traffic control system. But it's up to the American people to grant that power to the federal government and set the limits for that power. See, while I agree in a national air traffic control system, I do not agree that we should have a national airport control system. I don't believe we should have a national transportation security administration. Not the least of which because they've proven themselves to be an abysmal failure at their job, but because if you live in a rural area, your needs for security are much different than if you live in a large urban area. So that's one area where I wonder. That bothers me. It bothers me that we've let the ends justify the means and we've stopped putting guardrails around the federal government. When they say they have to do something, we let them do it without actually giving them the authority to do it. But it's even worse. I found this article. This actually came out of Just the News. Apparently, election officials from states across the country are begging Congress to send them tens of billions of dollars for their election integrity projects. That's right. States sent a letter to Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer saying they need Congress to give them money to help secure their elections. Quoting, it says, "Our states have just been through the most challenging election imaginable. The COVID-19 crisis, huge shift to vote by mail ballots, unprecedented dissemination of disinformation, and threats against the election officials of both parties. Each of these challenges was extraordinarily costly and put deep strain on our states, counties, and cities. Nevertheless, together, we held an historically successful election with the largest turnout in a century and extremely accurate results." And I might question some of those statements, but they go on to say, they need $20 billion. They need the federal government to provide them money because they couldn't do them themselves. Now, I want you to realize what they're talking about is they are vassals to the federal government. The federal government doesn't give money. The federal government takes money from somewhere else to spend somewhere else. So what they're really doing is they're not asking for money from Congress. They're asking the rest of the 50 states to subsidize their mismanagement of their election process and their election funds. So election officials from the states of Arizona, New Jersey, California, New Mexico, Colorado, New York, Connecticut, Oregon, Maine, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Rhode Island, Minnesota, and Vermont are begging you to bail them out because they couldn't handle their election, because they made a mess of their elections. I mean, look at what they're talking about. The COVID crisis. Well, by the time of the November 2020 elections, the COVID crisis was political, not medical. There's no reason why they had to change the balloting process for COVID-19. The same thing, the vote by mail, that was something the states instituted. They didn't need to do that. That was their decision. They refer to the unprecedented dissemination of disinformation. What does that have to do with the election? Threats against election officials of both parties. Well, that's nothing new, ladies and gentlemen. But you see, these states, if you live in one of these states, those states have officially said, you know what? We are vassals of the federal government. We can't even hold an election without the federal government giving us help. Is that where you want to live? Do you live in a vassal state? Now, this is just one example. I've already talked about the COVID mandates and the 24 attorneys general that are threatening, that are basically saying to President Biden, hey, reconsider what you're doing, or, you know, maybe we'll have to look at possibly suing you. Is that what we've come to? Or a Washington State public high school football coach who is begging the federal courts to uphold his right to pray. See, you're basically telling me that a person's right to pray is now in the hands of the federal courts? The state governments have become such weak vassals of Washington that they can't deal with this themselves? That the people of these states can't deal with this problem? That the citizens of the state of Washington would infringe on someone's right to pray simply because it's after a high school game at a public school? Is that what America has really fallen to? So let me wrap this up by going back to my original thought. The poll that showed just how little those who are polled, those Americans who are polled, think the government is doing to protect their rights. And they're right. I mean, actually, I think some of these numbers are probably higher than the federal government deserves. But we're dealing with opinions. We're not dealing with facts. But what does it say about the American people? That they can look at a poll like this and say, you know what? More than half of Americans, assuming this poll is accurate, don't believe the federal government's protecting their freedom of speech. But we keep hiring the same buffoons to do it. Only a third think they're doing a good job protecting your right to keep and bear arms, but we still hire the same people to do it. That only a quarter think that they're protecting the right to privacy, and 31% think they're doing a good job protecting your freedom from unreasonable search and seizure. But we still hire the same representatives to exercise our authority in Congress, the people who are passing the laws. You see, I look at this, and I know most people look at this and point their finger at the federal government, but I think most of the responsibility lays with the American people. See, while it is the purpose of government to protect our rights, it is the responsibility of the people to protect their rights. We hire government to do this, but we don't delegate all of our authority to do that. We don't give up our ability to protect our rights simply because we've hired government to do so. So I look at this and say, this should be a call to the American people to recognize that if government is not doing a good job, if they are not protecting our rights like they're supposed to, then it's up to us to do something about it. It's time for us, I would say, to hire better representatives. But I go back to the Declaration of Independence, right where I started. And I talked about that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. But there's more. See, the Declaration goes on to say that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. See, when the form of government becomes destructive of its ends of protecting our rights, it is the right of the people to alter or even abolish it. And after giving you examples, numerous examples, of the abuses of the federal government and of the subjugation and submission of the states and the people, I'm reminded of another line from the Declaration of Independence. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidence is designed to reduce them under utter despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. See, it's not just our right, it's our duty to hold government accountable. And if they are abusing, if they are usurping powers, if they are abusing the people, it's our duty to alter that. And I'm reminded of a quote from Abraham Lincoln, where he said, "The people are the rightful masters of both Congress and courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution." You see, we are the rightful masters of Congress, of a court, of the president himself. The question is, will we overturn the people who are perverting the Constitution? Or will we allow the Constitution to continue to be perverted until it has become an utter meaningless scrap dumped on the ash heap of history? Now, America Out Loud plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best-in-class apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. You can stream 24/7 now, including even the podcasts. Check it out at AmericaOutLoud.com.
Hey, Bill, stay out of jail. Love the neighbors and have a few good friends.